The densely packed skyscrapers of Manhattan twinkle. The lights go out, apart from a long cluster in the middle which becomes the logo. Miramax Films. The beams of three searchlights point straight up. The Weinstein Company. The searchlights go out. Miramax Films and the Weinstein Company present. A stark line of barred doors runs along a corridor in a prison cell block. As guards dressed in black appear at each end of the corridor, inmates lean on the doors, some with their hands poking through the bars. The doors slide open and the inmates, all in denims, walk out and line up. The inmates walk in line out to the exercise yard. A De Bonaventura Pictures production, in association with Paddle XV Productions Limited. A film by Mikhail Hafstrom, Clive Owen, Jennifer Aniston, Vincent Cassell, Derail, Melissa George, Giancarlo Esposito. A group of guys play basketball. In the yard, a couple of bullet-headed white guys stand chatting. David Morrissey, Georgina Chapman, Dennis O'Hare, Tom Conti. A black guy shoots at the hoop, then stomps off. Guys lift weights in an outdoor gym, introducing Addison Timlin with Exhibit and RZA as Winston. Casting by A.V. Kaufman, CSA. UK casting by Carrie Hilton, CDG. Music by Edward Shearmuir. A fat guard strolls across the yard. Lines of cramped empty cells with tiled walls, a bunk, a table, a chair, and a wall light. An inmate wearing an untucked blue denim shirt sits with his back to the bars. On the table in front of him is a blue exercise book, a pencil, a pack of cigarettes, and a matchbook. The inmate puts a cigarette in his mouth, strikes a match and lights it. He shakes out the match. A label on the exercise book reads, Illinois State Penitentiary. The inmate opens the book at the first blank page and begins to write with the pencil.
The morning it all began. Began like any other morning.
October. In a large white detached house, Charles Shine, a man in his 30s with dark brown hair, is woken by his dog Bernie.
No!
Oh, Bernie.
Charles's daughter Amy calls out from the hall.
Lunch money and a note for Jim. And you promised to help me with my book report, remember?
Charles stares at Bernie. Later in the kitchen diner.
The author devotes a lot of time to developing the characters and he seduces the reader by...
Seduces?
Yeah, he draws you in, you know? You want to know how it ends.
But I already knew how it ended.
Okay, so right, it was predictable.
No, Dad, I mean I've seen the movie.
Oh, right. Come on, we gotta eat.
Can't you think of another word?
Intrigues.
Intrigues. Thanks, Mom. You're much smarter than Dad, you know that?
Yes, and God help us if he ever finds out.
Well, if Mom's so smart, maybe she should help you with your book report.
See what I mean?
I have a meeting, Dee.
Yeah, I have meetings, too. Amy, your book report, your call. Me or him?
I choose option C, where you two get me a tutor.
Yep, we've been through this. Where is it?
It's over there.
Deanna, Charles's wife, points and he picks up a phone.
To the hospital. Yep. Speaking. No. No, the levels are the same. Yep. I'll fax it over when I get to work. Thanks.
Going to the ATM?
Wants to live forever, right?
Amy, the doctors say you have to stay positive.
At least it's not going up.
It's not going down either, though.
Positive.
Mm. Blonde, pretty Deanna grabs a coat.
Amy, your bus will be here soon.
Bye.
Amy's facing Charles.
We used to kiss each other goodbye in the mornings.
Charles stares at Amy.
Shut up. Come on. The author intrigues the reader by twisting the narrative, so you never know what's coming next. How's that?
Sorry.
Amy grins broadly. Later, Charles runs for a train in the pouring rain.
The train on platform 2 is the 7th.
750 Red Line Service to Chicago.
As the train pulls away, Charles bashes it with his case. Charles is wet through. He looks at the display board. Next train, 8:15. Later he's sitting in a carriage reading a paper. He glances along a few seats and stares at a young woman's slender, stockinged legs and high-heeled shoes. Charles is lost for a moment, then notices two guys at the end of the carriage staring at him. Chastened, Charles looks down at his paper. The uniformed ticket collector walks up.
Ticket?
Oh, shit. I meant to get one at the station.
$9.
He opens his wallet.
Oh, gee, this is embarrassing.
And it's only Monday.
My wife, she emptied my wallet when she left for work this morning.
Oh, so it's the wife's fault, is it?
Yeah, I'm just trying to explain.
Look, it's $9. Pay up or get off at the next stop. It's that simple.
I'll pay for him.
What? No, you don't have to do that.
Don't worry about it.
Taken aback, Charles frowns. The ticket collector goes to the woman with the sexy legs and takes her money.
One lucky guy.
No, really. It's my fault.
It's all right. I paid, didn't I?
She gives him a confident, twinkly look. Charles gathers up his things and goes to sit opposite her. She's smart, elegant, and pretty, with auburn hair tied up loosely.
Thank you. Just so you know, it wasn't an act or anything.
It was a shameless act. And I'm a born sucker. Just drop it.
I don't want you to think.
Okay. I don't.
She looks at him levelly, then carries on reading her paper. He leans to her, coyly.
I mean, there's an ATM at Union if you're getting off there.
Tomorrow is fine.
Smiling, Charles glances out of the window. She keeps her eyes on her paper.
Of course, there is a 10% interest charge overnight.
Interest charge?
Plus a handling fee.
Ouch. Never met a woman loan shark before. You break legs too?
Just balls.
Oh? You're a lawyer.
I'm a financial advisor. I cheat clients.
I'm a commercial executive. I con housewives.
Where do you work?
JMD March. It's a mid-sized place. We've got some semi-decent accounts. You?
Avery Price. It's a big place. We don't do semi-decent accounts.
Charles smirks cheekily. With a slight smile, she looks back at her paper.
This is your usual train.
Why?
So I'll know how to pay it back.
It's $9. I think I'll survive.
No, I gotta give it back. I'd feel ethically impugned if I didn't.
Impugned? Well, I wouldn't want you to feel impugned.
Their eyes sparkle as they scrutinize each other. The silver train glides towards a cluster of tower blocks. At work, Charles walks up to reception, where a guy with braided afro hair is standing by a post trolley.
Morning.
Hey.
They walk together.
Oh, yo, I got a good one for you.
7 players, 40 plus home runs, with 11 letters in their last names.
You're Stremski.
Stremski. You gotta spell that for me.
Morning, Charles.
YASTREMSKI. Barry, need a cash check.
How much and what for?
$12,000. Location fees to the Mary Spend One shoe.
Don't forget to sign the receipt this time.
Are you very outsider than blood?
Heard that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's one. I need 6 more.
Petrocelli.
Petrocelli?
Oh, Charles. Elliot's looking for you.
Charles goes to his desk.
Oh, come on, yo. It's only 10 letters, yo. What else you got? Come on, Chaz. You got them all last week, yo, and I need this.
All right, Winston. Any of these guys national leaguers?
Well, I thought it was the major league or the minor league. What's a national league?
What, you don't follow baseball?
Nah, man. Hockey's my game. More gore, less bore, baby.
So where'd you get the questions from?
Well, this cop I know gives them to me. Well, actually, he's like my uncle. He's obsessed with this shit, yo. Loves challenging me. Said if I get it right, I get $100. And you know I got to make that money, man.
Wait a minute. You don't know the answers?
No, duh. That's why I come to you, Chaz. Hey, where you been? You're late. Come on.
Sorry.
A short man.
This is not a lady who likes to wait, you know.
A stern-faced blonde woman.
Susan.
Charles.
Hi.
He kisses her cheek.
I guess you're here to raise our commission, hey?
We have some issues. We feel like no matter how much we talk to you, we just don't get heard by you people.
She looks at storyboards.
Now, this last commercial's a case in point. We agreed on a strategy. We signed off on it. Then what happened? You went off in all these other directions. Cut you sent us? It's nothing like how we said it should be.
Look, Susan, the directions I took were, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years, okay?
He looks at the short man, Elliot, and a female assistant, then throws out his hands.
I'm sorry. I'll do it however it is you want it done.
Susan smiles.
The time for apologies is over. What we need now is change.
She sits down. Charles stares at her.
You don't want me on the account?
Elliot stands up.
Susan appreciates all you've done. You have different visions.
Charles glares at Susan and walks out of the office. At home, Deanna's filling in a blood sugar chart. Charles walks in.
Shut up, Bernie. I live here. Amy, please!
Bernie, cut it out! You're late.
Sorry.
How's work?
Work was fine. You?
Guess who's decided to monitor me this week? Ethan Jeffries.
Oh, the asshole.
I know he always throws a fit when I stray from the lesson plan.
There's a lot of that going around.
So what did I do? Handed out an English composition in the math hour today.
To chew you out in front of the kids.
The title for the composition was Why We Like Principal Jeffries. Jerry called. There was a message on the machine.
Where are you going?
I have a PTA meeting. It's been on the calendar for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Amy needs to be quizzed for a history test, and Bernie needs to pee.
Deanna, who has long, golden, wavy hair, goes. Charles stares at Bernie.
Name of the act that banned alcohol. What year?
1919.
Huh?
1919.
Yeah. You think we can turn this down a notch below deafening? Amy!
Amy, whose long hair is in pigtails, has dark rings under her eyes. She reluctantly picks up the remote and switches off the music. She's hooked up to a dialysis machine. Charles looks at his exercise book.
How long do...
He looks at Amy. On a couch with a notebook on her lap, she's glowering at him. He relents, giving a nod to the TV. She picks up the remote and turns the sound back on.
How long did Prohibition last?
14 years.
She makes a note. Charles watches her for a moment, then looks at his book. Next day, a train thunders across a level crossing. Charles is on the train. The woman who paid for his ticket comes and sits opposite.
Hey, up, Buster.
Hey, I looked for you.
Yeah, right. Give me my money.
Really? I did.
She sees a photo.
Is that your daughter?
Yeah. Amy.
Oh, mine's a few years younger.
What's her name?
Amber.
She opens her wallet and shows Charles a photo.
Oh, she's adorable.
Yeah. They make it all worth it, don't they?
They share a warm smile and sit back in their seats. The train speeds past a succession of industrial buildings. The woman raises her eyebrows and notices Charles' silky black leather briefcase on the seat beside him.
Nice briefcase.
It was a gift from my wife.
Oh, geez. Guess I should get one for my husband, huh?
She reads the metal tag.
If lost, please return to Charles Christopher Shine. Charles Christopher Shine. Isn't Shine a Jewish name?
Rabbinically.
Christopher Shine.
My mom was Catholic. I got all kinds of guilt.
Oh, how's that working out for you?
Fine. I had a lot of therapy when I was a kid.
You're kind of funny, aren't you?
You're an easy crowd. What's your name?
Lucinda. Lucinda Harris.
They pass densely packed skyscrapers.
So we came here when I was little, just me and my mom. We were only going to stay a year, but... How about you?
Oh, all over. I was an army brat. I grew up everywhere and nowhere. You know, my address changed every 6 months, and so did my best friend. But then again, I got to change too. You know, if I screwed up in Fort Hood, Texas, they didn't have to know about it in Saratoga, New York. You know, I could just be this whole other person.
That happened a lot. You screwing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was the consummate rebel against authority.
Oh, is that what you called it?
No, that's what my parents called it. I called it getting lit. But then I got my act together when I got out of school. Dad really wanted a lawyer, and he settled for a banker.
The next stop is Chicago Union Station. This is the end of the Red Line. All passengers, please disembark at this time. Thank you.
They stand and put their coats on.
Busy day?
Oh, in finance, every day is a busy day.
Oh, I bet you're getting a lot of angry calls with an economy like this.
Well, if you consider death threats angry.
Tell me about it. Clients, they love you when times are good, but...
Oh, no, no. When times are good, you never make them enough money. There's always some cousin or brother or grandmother whose stock splits 64 ways and...
Why can't you sell them one of those? Like I got some crystal ball or something.
Tell me about it. I just got fired off my biggest account. My boss didn't even warn me. He's supposed to be a good friend of mine.
That bastard. You want me to yell at him for you? Come on, give me his number. I'll crank call him.
They smile. Lucinda leans to Charles conspiratorially.
Some people just don't know how to appreciate what they've got.
She gives him a pointed look, quickly turns and walks away. Charles watches her go with an intense stare. Charles's office building is a shimmering angular glass tower. He sits at his desk, frowning broodily. He moves his mouse and clears the internet address bar from the screen. He starts to type as a colleague walks past.
Morning, Charles.
Charles brings up the Avery Price Financial Consultants website on his computer screen. He clicks on Lucinda Harris, Financial Advisor. Her CV appears. It ends with, Lucinda lives with her husband, stockbroker Grant Harris, and their daughter Amber. He glances at a photo of Deanna looking glamorous in a white fur coat. Winston stops by.
Yes, sir. What up, Chaz?
Hey.
Yo, you all right? Look a little sick in the face, man, like you got the bug or something.
No.
Hey, it ain't contagious, is it?
It's nothing.
Yeah, that's what Dick Lindbergh said.
Who's Dick Lindbergh?
Oh, ain't nobody now. That motherfucker dead, yo.
Winston!
He comes back.
Come here. Let me ask you something.
Winston sits opposite Charles.
It's about the computers?
No, no.
Nah, because, you know, I really appreciate what you did for me and everything.
Forget about it. Buy me a beer sometime, okay? This is something else.
I got a suit for it.
Charles looks down and considers.
Say you went to the movies, but you forgot your money and someone else offered to buy you a ticket for you.
In Chicago?
Yeah, I'm just saying, hypothetically. It's only right to talk to them, isn't it? I mean, thank them. Show you appreciate it somehow, right?
Yo, this full price of matinee, because that's the difference between $5 or $10, man.
You know what? Never mind.
Hey, yo, I asked that cop, though, about those questions, and three of the other players were National Leaguers.
Yeah, I'm still working on that.
So I need those answers by tomorrow to get that moolah, baby. You cool about the computers, though, right?
Yes, Winston. We're cool.
Chaz. You cool about the computers, right?
Charles frowns at Winston. Winston grins and points at Charles, then goes. Charles smiles wryly, then looks at the phone number on the Avery Price website. He considers for a moment, then picks up his telephone and dials.
Lucinda.
You mean Lucinda Harris?
Yeah, could you tell her it's Charles Shine?
I'll put you through to her office.
Charles swings round in his chair.
Charles.
Hey.
In a restaurant.
You want this beautiful house in Lake Forest? Just the kind of house that I dreamed about as a kid.
What's your husband do?
He golfs.
For a living?
He wishes. No, he's a broker. We met at Stanford. He's up at 3 a.m. so that he can be in the offices when London opens. And we also have an apartment in the city, and he stays there sometimes during the week to avoid the commute. And, of course, the weekends are for golf, so...
So when do you see each other?
The usuals. Birthdays, Christmases. We communicate mainly via Hallmark. But, hey, I have a beautiful, wonderful baby girl. So there.
That night, Charles is lying next to Deanna in bed, wide awake. There's an intercom speaker on the bedside table. Charles frowns, looks at the speaker, and leaps out of bed. He runs to Amy's bedroom. She's lying on the floor, clutching her chest, convulsing.
Deanna!
He kneels down and lifts Amy up.
Amy, can you hear me? Can you hear me, sweetheart? Breathe. Breathe, Amy. Breathe.
Deanna runs in and grabs a syringe from a box.
Daddy's here. It's okay. Everything's okay. Daddy's here. There you go. There you go, sweetheart.
Deanna draws some liquid from a bottle into the syringe, pulls up Amy's sleeve, and injects her in the arm.
There you go. There you go. It's okay, sweetheart. It's okay. Amy.
Deanna covers Amy in a duvet and hugs her tightly. Charles is with Lucinda in an elegant restaurant.
Diabetes?
Type 1, worst kind. We took out her second mortgage on the house to get her one of those mobile dialysis machines so she doesn't have to go to the hospital every day.
Can't they give her a new kidney?
They have. 3 times. Her body keeps rejecting them. There's this new anti-rejection drug coming out. It's supposed to be amazing. Has to be approved, but they say it's got a 99% rate of success in the test so far.
Expensive?
Like you wouldn't believe. And of course, insurance won't cover it.
Sure. Probably cheaper to let her suffer, right?
You're okay. We've been saving for years. So now we just sit around and wait for the call.
As Deanna arrives home and gets out of her car, she takes a call on her cell phone.
Hi. Amy, don't let Bernie out.
Hey, you home?
Yeah, just now. What's wrong?
I just got out of Elliot's office. He's slamming with some big new account. I'm gonna be home late, so don't wait up.
All right. Charles, how come you're calling from your cell phone? Amy, your bag's in the back, honey.
I don't know. I'm just down the hall. Wanted to let you know as soon as possible.
Thanks.
I'm sorry. It's been kind of hectic lately.
I gotta go.
Do you want to meet for lunch tomorrow? All right, see ya.
Bye.
Yeah. All right, honey.
At the restaurant table, Lucinda hangs up her cell phone. Deanna sighs as she trudges into the house with bags of shopping. Later, Lucinda and Charles are in a heaving bar. They knock back shots in unison and grin at each other. Charles leans on the bar and raises his hand to the barkeep.
Excuse me.
Same again?
Oh, I'm drinking you under the bar, mister.
Really?
Yeah, and I bet I can do it in 3 drinks.
You like to gamble?
Well, it's not really gambling when you never lose.
I got a bet.
Really?
I bet you $20 that I can kiss you without ever touching your lips.
Kiss me?
Without touching.
How?
What do you mean, how? That's the bet.
Okay, let me see the 20.
Charles holds up a 20. Lucinda snatches it out of his hand and slaps it on the bar. She squares up to Charles and stares intensely into his eyes. A slight smile plays across his lips. Charles moves closer to Lucinda, as if in slow motion, opens his mouth slightly and kisses her delicately on the lips. The kiss lingers for a moment, then he moves away. They look at each other dreamily.
Worth every penny.
She stares at him, her mouth slightly open.
What are we doing? Never done this before.
Me neither.
All the years I've been married, never lied to my husband. Not once.
They smile brazenly at each other. Charles and Lucinda walk out of the bar into the pouring rain. As Lucinda puts her raincoat on, Charles runs to the curb and holds his hand out to hail a cab. It drives past. He stands there for a moment, rain dripping off his slate-grey coat, then goes and grabs Lucinda's hand and leads her across the street. As cars and pedestrians pass to and fro, Charles and Lucinda run hand in hand into the shadows. He turns her so her back's against a wall, and they kiss each other hungrily. Lucinda wraps her arms around Charles's neck. Lucinda and Charles ride a cab through town. They pass the Renaissance Hotel.
That one?
No, my husband meets clients there.
Glaring headlamps from cars stopped at lights shimmer on the cab's wet windows. Charles points.
Hey, how about that one?
Preoccupied, Lucinda barely looks.
You okay?
Yeah.
Lucinda stares ahead, her wet hair hanging limp around her face.
Stop the cab, please.
Sure, lady.
I can't, Charles. I'm sorry.
Lucinda gets out.
Keep the change.
Thanks, buddy. Good luck with it.
Briefcase in hand, Lucinda walks a few steps away from the cab. Charles gets out and goes over to her.
I know.
Charles turns and stares at a grubby white Victorian-style building. Lucinda follows his gaze. A tree casts indistinct shadows across the facade. An awning in front of the porch has LH and Lake Hotel written on it in italics. Charles and Lucinda turn to face each other. They enter the marble and wood-paneled lobby. The night clerk behind the desk is a haggard-looking guy in his 30s wearing a baseball cap and a windbreaker over an open shirt and T-shirt. Charles walks up to him.
How much for a room?
$46. You want to use the hotel safe? It's an extra $10.
Just the room, please.
As the clerk grabs a key and hands it to Charles, Lucinda takes in her dowdy surroundings. The clerk points to his right.
It's that way.
Stern-faced, Charles walks off with Lucinda. Upstairs, they step out of an elevator. Outside the elevator are two white chairs and a small round table with a chintzy lamp on it. Charles checks his key, then he and Lucinda walk along a corridor. The walls and floor are sludge-coloured, illuminated by more chintzy, old-fashioned lamps. There are doorways painted dark green and a window at the end with half-drawn rust-red curtains. Charles unlocks a door and goes into a room. Lucinda stands outside. Charles switches on the light. Lucinda slowly walks in and he closes the door. Charles and Lucinda stand staring at the room. It has yellow patterned wallpaper and a double bed with a black and white checked bedspread. Bedside tables have lamps with tasseled shades. Charles looks at Lucinda.
Beautiful.
Charles smiles wryly and goes to the bathroom. Lucinda glances round tensely, then puts down her briefcase and goes to a dressing table. She pulls the cord on the flowery lamp, bends down and stares into the mirror. She studies herself. In the bathroom, Charles looks at himself in a wall mirror. Lucinda moves away from the mirror. In the bathroom, Charles smooths the hair on the back of his head. Lucinda goes and sits on the edge of the bed. Charles comes out of the bathroom and looks intently at Lucinda, who smiles thoughtfully back at him.
So what do you think?
He slowly walks across in front of Lucinda, twitching his fingers, then looks at her. She follows him with her eyes.
You want to stay or you want to go?
She narrows her eyes thoughtfully, folds her arms and stands up.
I don't know.
Eyes sparkling, Charles walks towards Lucinda, who smiles slightly. They stand close together. Charles, slightly taller than Lucinda, moves in and they kiss, open-mouthed. Their lips gently touch. They kiss with growing passion. Lucinda runs her hand up the front of Charles's blue shirt and pulls off his jacket. They wrap their arms around each other and fall onto the bed. Charles on top of Lucinda. As Lucinda caresses Charles, he kisses her neck. She writhes beneath him as he undoes her purple blouse and kisses her breast. Lucinda runs her fingers over Charles's back and rolls him over so she's on top of him. He runs his hands over her body and she undoes his shirt, then lunges down and kisses him forcefully. Lucinda lifts Charles's vest and kisses his chest. He leans up and they hold each other's faces in their hands as they kiss. Charles and Lucinda look at each other for a moment, then she lays him down. She undoes his belt and pulls open his trousers. A man's pointing a gun at her head.
You make one sound and I'll blow your fucking heads apart.
He points the gun at Charles and, holding Lucinda by her hair, pushes her onto the bed beside him.
Always chain your door in a place like this. But hey, thanks for the invite.
I'll give you all my money.
He punches Charles in the face.
No sound, you shut the fuck up.
Please don't hurt.
You get that? Give me your fucking wallet now. Come on, give me your wallet. Come on.
Lucinda hands over her bag. Charles gives the man his wallet and he goes through it. The man looks at a photo in Charles's wallet.
This doesn't look like her. Charlie,
The bearded, woolly-hatted intruder turns Lucinda's handbag upside down and shakes out the contents. He finds a photo of her husband and shows it to Charles.
That stupid fuck doesn't look like you neither.
He pulls out a card.
Lucinda. You two are fucking around, huh? Slumming it. Ain't you? You're fucking slumming it, you piece of shit. Isn't that exciting?
Please, just take the money.
Chuck, I already took your money. You see this? This was your money, and I took it. Now it's mine.
I promise we won't go to the police.
I know you won't go to the police, because you look like a nice guy. Ain't you a nice guy? You look nice to me.
He holds the gun to Charles's head.
She looks kind of nice, too. Are you nice? Lucinda.
He grabs hold of her ankle.
Don't let her go, please.
Come on, come on.
Please.
How can I let her go, such a fine piece of ass like that? Look at that. Me and fucking Lucinda, we gotta do a lot of things together. All kinds of shit.
He touches her.
Oh, man. I could make you scream, you know. Is she better than your wife at home? Love it, ass.
As the man goes to lift her skirt, Charles attacks him, but is thrown against a table, hitting his head.
What you say, Charlie?
He hits Charles.
I can fuck her? Well, thanks. Charlie, I knew you were a nice guy.
Lucinda runs to the door, but the man grabs her.
Oh, you coming, Lucinda? You gonna take it from him, or you gonna go for a hold?
His face smeared in blood, Charles winces in agony, while Lucinda and the man struggle. The man throws Lucinda onto the bed and she kicks at him as he tries to grab her legs. He holds the gun to her head and she stops kicking. He yanks her legs apart.
Check this out, Charlie. Championship fucking right here. 12-rounder.
He undoes his belt and jeans, then reaches up Lucinda's skirt and rips off her underwear.
Oh, please.
Shut up.
He pulls down his pants.
You don't want to miss this.
Charles lies on the floor, his bloody head lolling slowly from side to side, his mouth slightly open and his eyes closed as the man forcefully mounts Lucinda and rapes her.
No, please.
Hey, Chuck. Fuck, I like that. Hey, come on, Chuck. Don't fail me, man. Round four coming up.
Harsh electric light burns on Charles's face. Dark red clotted blood is caked around his nostrils. There are bloody streaks around his mouth and scratches all over his face. He winces and gulps as he slowly wakes. He moves his head from side to side, then screws up his face and with a mighty effort sits up. Lucinda's sitting on the edge of the bed in her blue slip, her left arm on her lap, and her right arm held up in front of her chest. Charles looks around, horrified, and slowly heaves himself to his feet. Lucinda is motionless as Charles walks round and looks at her. His crumpled shirt hangs open, his vest is stained with blood. He stares at Lucinda with a haunted expression.
I'll take you to a hospital.
Lucinda doesn't move. Charles goes over to the door and reaches his hand out to the undone safety chain hanging against the door frame, but doesn't touch it. He turns back to Lucinda and looks at her, uncomprehending. He shakes his head.
I'm so sorry.
Charles stares at Lucinda.
I'll call the police.
He goes back to the bedside table and picks up the phone.
No, no.
We gotta give a description.
Stop it.
Lucinda clenches her eyes shut tight, then opens them wide.
No. Police are gonna want to know what we were doing here.
So we tell them. We have to.
Can't. Oh, my God, my family.
What do you want me to do? Tell me what to do.
I just want you to get me out of here.
Lucinda gets up and goes to the bathroom. Charles looks down at his disheveled clothes. A taxi waits on the street. Charles and Lucinda walk away from the Lake Hotel, Lucinda clutching her coat around herself. Charles opens the back door of the taxi, and without looking at him, Lucinda gets in. Charles watches as, glassy-eyed, Lucinda speaks to the driver, and he pulls away. In the city, Charles walks under a railway viaduct. Traffic passes to and fro as Charles walks on slowly, robotically, as if in a trance, his battered face set in a frown. A train passes overhead. Charles arrives at work, the blood cleaned off his bruised face. There's a white plaster over his swollen nose. People stare at him as he walks by. He meets Winston.
Holy shit, Chess. Looks like you got hit by a train, man.
Charles walks on. Elliot steps up.
Okay, I'm fine. I just had a little accident.
What the hell happened?
I got mugged.
Jesus.
I just been to the hospital. The doctor said I'm good. No permanent damage.
You get a look at this guy, Chess?
No.
Charles goes to his office. Elliot follows him.
You call the police?
They're gonna call me if my wallet turns up.
Maybe you ought to go home. Did you call Deanna?
Yeah. I just, a couple of things I gotta do. Cancel my credit cards, call the DMV.
Charles, don't be stupid. Go home, okay?
Sitting behind his desk, Charles stares anxiously after Elliot, who walks away. At home, Charles soaks in a bath. Deanna sits beside the bath, her blonde hair tied back from her beautiful young face.
Goddamn city. I hate it.
I work in the city, Dee. I can't just quit my job. What would I do?
You could teach again. You used to be a great teacher.
My job is what allows us to save Framer's drugs. How do we do that on a pair of teacher's salaries?
We could sell the house.
We already got two mortgages on the house. Selling it doesn't do us any good.
Amy looks in.
Mom?
Yeah. Hey, sweetie.
Deanna goes with Amy to her room, where she sits up in bed. Deanna makes Amy comfortable and unhooks some tubes from the dialysis machine.
Deanna, can you get that?
The phone's sitting on the toilet system.
Dee!
Sweetie. Just give me a minute.
Charles leans up and grabs the cordless phone. The display reads, unknown number.
Yeah.
Hey, Charlie. Charlie, can you hear me?
What do you want?
How's your busted nose? Still hurting?
Why are you calling me?
You know, just checking out if you're keeping your promise about the police and all. Because after all, promise is a promise, huh?
Hello?
I got it, Dee. It's business.
Your business call. Honey, for God's sake. Excuse me, who's this?
Well, this is Mr. LaRoche.
Mr. LaRoche.
My husband's had a rough day. Can this wait?
Why, what happened?
He was mugged.
Mugged? Charles, I had no idea. Please, I'm sorry. Why didn't you tell me so?
Honey, can you hang up, please?
Okay, hon.
So you haven't told her, huh? Have you? You haven't told your wife you're fucking Lucinda, huh?
And you listen to me, you fucking asshole. You go near her again, I swear to God.
I need a loan, Charlie. I really hate to ask, but I'm a little short, and since you canceled your credit cards, well, you know what? I need 20,000.
That's ridiculous. I don't have 20,000.
Charlie, you're a big fucking executive.
Look, I don't have that kind of cash just lying around.
Hey, man, I just don't give a shit about your cash flow. I want 20,000 now, you hear me?
Okay, I'll get it.
What do you get? I want to hear it because, you know, my English is not very good. Ready?
I'll get you the 20,000.
Okay, well, thank you, Charlie. Corner of Western and Parkway, noon Friday.
Don't you ever call me at home again.
Charlie.
In a dark suit, Charles is sitting in the plush reception of Avery Price. Wearing a black dress, Lucinda walks over holding an envelope.
Hey. You okay?
They sit facing each other.
Haven't seen you on the train all week.
I've called in sick the whole week. I can't eat,
can't sleep. So he called you.
I think we should go to the place.
No. No, Charles, you are not understanding me. If my husband finds out that I had an affair, he will file for divorce. He will do anything.
What do you mean?
He'll take my daughter.
Really?
Yes. You don't know him. He's not like you. Now, this is all I can spare without my husband noticing.
No. No way. No, I'll take care of it.
He hands back the envelope.
I just wanted to make sure you're okay.
They look into each other's eyes.
I don't think we should see each other anymore. I'm sorry.
She gets up and starts to walk away. Charles follows her.
Hey. I want to see you.
I can't, Charles. I'm sorry. I can't.
Charles watches her walk away, then notices a receptionist behind the front desk glaring at him.
What?
Charles shoots her a tense, anxious look, then walks away. At home, sitting in front of his computer, he rests his hand on the mouse. The screen is headed Personal Accounts. Charles highlights a figure, $21,962.38. He holds his finger over the delete button. He gulps and glances at the speaker linked to the intercom in Amy's room. He presses the button. The figure changes to zero. Next day, Charles walks through a seedy part of town, briefcase in hand. Guys and girls are hanging out by their cars on the street. Charles heads along a busy sidewalk. A long-haired guy approaches him.
Where are you going? Hey,
come on, we're talking.
Hey.
Charles stops and looks down an alley. A heavy-set black guy wearing a hood bumps into him.
Fuck, you don't watch where you going.
Sorry.
Man, sorry don't pay the bills, white boy. Sorry don't stop world wars or feed the poor. As far as I'm concerned, sorry's for shit.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
Charlie, is it? Your name Charlie?
Yeah.
Call you Chuck? Chuck, oh bump, banana fanna, oh fuck.
Where's the Roche?
We'll take you to him. Fuck you think I'm here for, the conversation?
Look, why don't I just give you the money?
Hey, man, you're not giving me shit, you understand? You got some pressure.
He pushes Charles against a wall.
Up against the wall, and don't fucking move.
He frisks Charles, yanks him by the back of his jacket, and marches him down the alley.
So you write commercials, huh?
Yeah.
I made this demo for this coffee commercial this one time. It was a fine piece of music.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd they say?
They said people who drink coffee don't like rap.
That's ridiculous.
That's what I said.
They go into a basement.
So, if I get something to you, you give it a listen, see what you can do with it.
Yeah, sure.
LaRoche, a stubbly guy with slicked back hair, is sitting with his feet up smoking.
Hey. Charlie.
With a charming smile, LaRoche, wearing a leather coat, saunters over to Charles and has a good look at him.
Man, you look like shit. Nice briefcase, though.
The heavy, Dexter, stands behind Charles, who hands the briefcase to LaRoche, who in turn tosses it to Dexter. Dexter yanks the case open, has a look inside, and gives LaRoche a nod. LaRoche throws out his hands in appreciation.
Well, thanks, Charlie.
He punches him.
That's for canceling your credit card. It is a nice briefcase.
It is a nice briefcase. Keep your head up, homie.
Charles is creased up on the floor. November. Charles's wounds have healed. Suited, he strolls along by the glass front of his office building. He sits on a low wall and has a cigarette. Winston walks over and rests on a rail beside him and has a cigarette.
Chaps. What up, y'all?
Hey.
Aw, man, welcome back.
How long has it been?
High school.
High school. Man, best 3 years of my life, man. All the pussy you could imagine. 4.0 GPA. Everything good till you lock my ass away.
What were you in for?
Me? I was what they call a recreational drug user.
And that's it.
I was also a recreational drug distributor. You know, a little H, some dope, digi.
So how was it?
Man, nothing but the best. I sold a pure commodity at a fair market price.
No, prison.
Winston looks grave. They go inside.
Prison's like walking a tightrope.
trying not to get involved, acting like you're blind 24 hours a day. This shit takes a shitload of concentration. I mean, when I first got in that joint, man, I was prime meat. I was what they call unaffiliated.
So what'd you do?
I got affiliated. I had to stick the shank up with some kid.
What, you killed him?
Your back is up against the wall, and it's you or him. You gotta do what you gotta do.
He points at Charles and steps into a glass elevator. Winston touches the peak of his baseball cap. The elevator descends. That night, walking along the leafy street towards his house, Charles answers his cell phone.
Yeah, this is Charles.
You ever get a little sidetracked, Charlie? I need another loan, Charlie.
Now listen. Listen to me. I've got no more money for you.
Okay. Okay, man, you win. You want me to leave you alone? I'll leave you alone. No problemo. For $100,000, though.
Fuck you.
You ain't that smart. Anybody ever told you that?
How'd you get this number?
That's it. Keep thinking like that. How did I get your cell number? It isn't listed, is it?
You called my wife.
No, guess again.
Charles walks slowly.
Okay, I'll give you a clue. On this phone, it's speed dial number 8. Hospital 1, Doctor 2. You're number 8. You don't even rate in the top 5. How's that feel, Charlie?
Charles stares at his phone display. It reads, home.
Oh, Jesus.
Charles runs along the path, tramping fallen leaves underfoot. His coat flaps, and his briefcase swings as he sprints, teeth gritted. Lights glow in the line of slatted windows at the front of the house. Charles bursts through his front door and marches into the living room. Suavely suited, bespectacled, and with a neatly trimmed goatee beard, LaRoche is sitting next to Deanna on the couch.
Hey, here's my man.
You okay? You look like you run a marathon.
What?
What did you say to him on the phone?
Well, in our business, one has to know how to light a fire under people. It's the best way to get things done. Do you not agree, Charles?
What's going on here?
Oh, Mr. LaRoche needs you to sign off on that thing he called about, remember?
LaRoche covers his face.
Oh, gosh. Did you think I would not come?
No, I thought you got the message.
I'm sorry. I'm confused. But, hey, you look so out of shape, Charles. Please do sit down and catch your breath for a second.
I'll pour you some coffee.
Deanna, you don't know how many times I told him to join my tennis club.
You what?
No, Charles. He prefers to follow sports, not play them.
But one has to keep fit in today's world, because you never know when you'll need to be at your fighting best. Please.
He's right. You might have been able to outrun that mugger.
Oh. Well, from what Charles told me, that thug had a jump on him from the very start. This is crazy. You never had a chance, did you?
Oh, I'm gonna get him back.
You're not getting anyone back. You have a family.
You're so right, Diana. So right. You want to protect your family, because at the end of the day, this is the most important thing in the whole world.
Mom, have you seen my sketchbook?
Get back upstairs, Amy. Go to your homework.
Charles. Amy, this is Mr. LaRoche. He works with your father.
Come here, beauty. Je m'appelle Philippe LaRoche. Comme une petite roche qui va bientôt baiser ton père par derrière. It means like a little stone that's rolling down the river. So cute. May I kiss you? You know, we were looking at your drawings. They're lovely, truly beautiful.
Thank you.
Such a talent. You know, when I first came to this beautiful country, I spent quite a lot of time in New York. And if you allow me, of course, I could show these to some very prominent art dealers.
That sounds great. How about we go sign off on this contract?
Oh, yes, business is business, of course. Bye-bye.
He pulls a string on the sketchbook.
She's so cute.
I'll be up soon, honey.
How old is she?
Deanna goes to the kitchen. Charles lunges at LaRoche.
Get the fuck out of my house.
What did you say?
Get out.
I beg your pardon?
He grabs Charles by the balls.
What'd you say? Ooh. Oh, you don't like that, huh? You upper crust motherfucker. Huh? you got it on, and yet you're ready to fuck it up for just a bit of pussy? Huh?
He looks into the kitchen.
$100,000. And I just might give you back your balls, bitch. You hear me? Say it, okay? Okay? Yeah, nice boy.
He lets Charles go.
Okay. Well, au revoir. Thanks for having me. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Charles is hunched on the floor.
He seems like a lovely guy.
Charles is with his lawyer, Jerry.
So, why didn't you call me when this whole thing began? I mean, I'm supposed to be your first call, Charles.
Allow me to lecture, Jerry. I need to know what my options are.
Look, she's got to come forward.
I told you, she can't do that.
We need a statement on the record.
Jerry, he was in my house with my family.
Right, he didn't break in. He didn't touch them.
Jerry, he broke my nose.
Okay, show me the police report. Did you go to the police when you got beat? So you've done nothing about this for 6 weeks, and now suddenly you want me to file a complaint? You've got to get her to come forward. Anything else is just pissing in the wind.
What are you doing here?
I spoke to my lawyer. We have to go to the police.
We can't go to the police.
Listen to me. We didn't sleep together.
It's the same thing. Just because we didn't fuck doesn't mean we didn't cross the line. We went to the hotel. We started to do it. And we didn't stop out of the conscience of our hearts.
Exactly. We were attacked.
Lucinda's eyes dart from side to side as she thinks.
I had an abortion, Charles.
What?
Charles looks round nervously.
Why didn't you tell me? What? I could have helped. I could have done something.
Done what, Charles? What could you have done?
In a bar, Winston screams at an ice hockey game on TV. He sits facing Charles.
So, you know how I get zoned to this hockey shit, Chaz, man. Okay, I'm listening.
So what do you think I should do?
Shit, I don't know, man. But you see how it works, though, right? First, he lures you in with the 20 grand. Most folks like you, you could pull together 20 grand if you had to, right? You think, 20 grand, bong, and he's gone, right? Nah, it's not about that. First, he want to see if you're the kind of asshole who pays. Then after that, whoosh, slap the big dick on you. Hit you for the real cheese, the big bucks. That's what this game is all about, Chaz.
Thanks, Winston. I feel so much better now.
You're a wild cowboy, yo.
Winston grins.
Well, can you pay him?
Technically, yeah, I have the money.
Shit, you also pay him, man. Be done with this.
I can't. It's put away for something else. It's years of savings. Can't touch it. Winston, I don't know what to do. I'm going out of my fucking mind here. It's like it's there everywhere I turn.
Calm down, Chaz. Look, man. Drink your beer.
Charles has a swig.
Shit, I ain't even strong enough right now. O'Malley, let us get a double scotch and hold the rocks. Come on! Let me tell you something. I spent 5 years in the joint with motherfuckers like this. And the first thing you must understand about a rapist is that they pussies. They weak. They prey on the weak.
So what do you think I should do?
Listen, man. I like you. Because you're different than the rest of them. And I don't like to see you in no position like this. So I'm gonna do you a solid. I'm gonna scare this pussy off your back for you.
No.
Listen, I owe you. I mean, when you caught me stealing those computers, you could have dropped a dime on me. I've been locked up for 3 more motherfucking years.
Winston, you owe me nothing.
Look at it this way, then. Let's make it a business proposition. I mean, instead of you giving this motherfucker 100K, you could pay me, say 10%. Yeah, $10,000 in cash. And I'll scare that Pepe Le Pew motherfucker all the way back to France.
At home, Amy opens a present wrapped in brightly colored paper.
Hurry up.
It's a makeup set.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. Look at this one.
Charles leaves the room, then walks back in holding a wooden painter's easel with a glittering bow tied on the front. Amy sees it and smiles. Deanna smiles warmly. Amy goes over to the easel.
It's beautiful.
She hugs Charles tightly.
Thank you.
Amy takes the bow off the easel. Charles and Deanna smile fondly at each other. Then she looks down bashfully. Charles's smile fades. He walks into work past a bank of 4 TV screens.
Charles, this just came in for you.
Charles takes the piece of paper and unfolds it. The paper is headed Lake Hotel. Written below is 10th and Union, 11 p.m. tonight. Charles looks up and sees Winston flirting with a couple of girls. Charles and Winston exchange a look, and Charles goes and picks up a phone.
Yeah?
Barry, it's me. I need a cash check for this aspirin spot.
Another one? How much you want this time?
$10,000.
All right, you come down here and you sign for it yourself, yeah?
Thanks.
In a car.
Hey, yo, Chaz. You know what my favorite song is? Let's Get Money. T.I.G. Lil Kim. My favorite artist? Eddie Money, Al Green, and Johnny motherfucking Chaz, baby. Oh, let me tell you, my favorite reverends, Frederick Price and Creflo Dollar.
Yes, Winston, I have your money.
Now, we're talking money here, Chaz. I'm just trying to make conversation, man. You okay, Chaz?
Yeah.
Let me turn this up for you, baby. Get a crack on this motherfucker.
Winston drives them through the city in his Mercedes.
Don't fuck with me. Big screens so the trucks can see just luxury. So don't make things ugly. Help us heat for the cold of the streets. Some cold as can be. Impact the Mac 11 pound of weed.
They stop in a side street and Charles hands Winston a brown paper bag.
Uh-oh. Ching ching.
He opens the bag and sniffs it.
Love the smell of fresh money, yo.
He holds up a pistol.
Jesus. You're gonna shoot him?
I ain't gonna shoot him. I'm gonna scare his monkey ass off your back. It's not even loaded. But it's like an old gangster proverb, yo. You ain't gotta use force, but you gotta project strength.
Project strength. Right. Got it.
Chaz, my good buddy. It's time you got affiliated, man. Come on, take that.
A ceramic-bladed knife.
What, is this the one you
use? That's the one, yo. You know, for good luck. I'm gonna run inside this joint first. Scope it out. You know what I mean? When you feel comfortable, you come on in. We got maybe an hour before this bastard shows up.
You're gonna be close though, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna be close to you. Don't worry about that. I got your back, homie. You know, it's like in the movies and shit. You know what I mean? The bad guy's always one step ahead, right? So we gotta be two steps ahead of this crazy motherfucker.
Winston slumps forward, a bullet hole in the back of his head. LaRoche leans in and grabs the envelope.
Charlie. This doesn't look like 100 to me.
God almighty. You killed him.
Hey, you brought him, you fucking piece of shit, and this isn't good for our relationship.
LaRoche takes the envelope and goes. Wide-eyed with shock, Charles looks around, horrified, then heaves Winston back in his seat. Winston's face and neck covered in blood.
Oh, Jesus.
Charles gets out of the car, opens the back door and grabs his briefcase. A red coupe pulls up and a young woman climbs out.
Asshole! Could've been coming instead of going.
She's squeezed into tight, revealing clothes.
Want a date, hon? Hey, you. You by the car. You looking?
No, I'm fine.
What about him? Maybe he wants a date.
I don't think so.
What's wrong with him? He drunk?
Yeah. Yeah, he's drunk. Okay.
You got a light?
I don't smoke.
You don't smoke? You don't drink? You don't fuck? What do you do?
A cop car pulls up.
Get out of here. Get out.
What? Hey, screw you. You don't tell me to get out of nowhere.
What's up, Candy?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Candy.
You even say?
You know me.
The cop lights her cigarette.
I'm careful these days.
Hey, you.
He spotlights Charles.
Conducting a transaction with Candy here?
No, officer.
No. What? Something wrong with her?
No, she's great.
Great, huh? You married?
Yes.
Your old lady know you go around trolling for hookers?
I'm not. Look.
How about your buddy? He married?
He's drunk.
If he's drunk, what's he doing behind the wheel? Hey, buddy! Hey, you there?
He's sleeping it off, sir.
Blood drips from the car by Charles's feet.
So the two of you were out trolling for hookers on a Wednesday night. Neither of you are doing business with Candy here.
I'm sorry.
Whoa. Don't apologize to me. Tell her you're sorry. Freezing her ass off out here, and you two jokers don't even give her the time of day.
Charles stares incredulously at Candy and Joe the cop, who share a knowing smile. Candy walks over to Charles, who digs some money out of his pocket and hands it to her. She smiles sweetly.
Sorry, Matt.
We'll call it a deposit, huh?
Joe turns to his colleague.
Believe this guy?
Yeah, come on, Joe, round the clock.
We're gonna circle the block. I come back and you're still here, I'm gonna take you and your buddy in.
Charles nods.
Yeah, see you, Candy.
Take it easy, Candy.
See you, Joe.
The cops drive away. Candy strolls off down the street, glancing back as she goes. Charles has a haunted expression as he cautiously waits for Candy to go. He opens the passenger door of the Mercedes and drags Winston over onto the passenger seat. As he heaves Winston's limp body, Charles grimaces grotesquely. He shuts the door, gets in the driver's seat, starts the car, and drives it towards the metal gates. He crashes through them. Charles drives onto some wasteland that slopes down to a river and stops. He kills the lights. Streetlights shimmer on the murky water. Charles thinks for a moment, then gets out of the car. He takes his scarf from around his neck and wipes the steering wheel and door handles inside and out. Winston slumps slightly in his seat. Charles reaches under the top of the door frame. He pushes the car forwards and lets it roll, with both of the front doors open. Charles wraps his scarf around his neck and watches the car head towards the water. The Mercedes surges into the water, then stops, the front just half submerged. Charles looks round sharply, runs down, wades in and pushes the car from the back. It won't budge. The car is stuck fast. Charles glances round, then creeps alongside the back door. Charles opens the back door, grabs his briefcase, and walks away. Charles creeps into his house, looking around nervously, his face soaked in sweat, his features haggard. He puts the car keys in his pocket, then takes out the homemade knife, the shank, that Winston gave him. It's comprised of three vicious-looking pointed shards of decreasing sizes, stuck flat against each other. Charles stares down at the weapon, then gazes off, glassy-eyed. At work, Charles is on the phone. A smart middle-aged man waits in the doorway.
I'm tired, Charles. Yeah. I told you I need that receipt for the aspirin spot.
I said you get it today, and you will.
Today?
Yes, lunchtime.
Well, you better.
Charles knocks a glass over.
You okay?
The man walks in.
Folks in the mailroom asked me to bring this up to you. Franklin Church, Chicago PD.
Where's
Winston? He was murdered last night.
What'd you say?
Yeah, that's right. About midnight under the highway. Killer tried to dump him in his car in the river.
Jesus. Jesus. I liked Winston. We were friends.
Yeah, I liked him too. We were like brothers. He was sort of a relative of mine.
You the baseball stats guy?
Yeah, that's me. Baseball freak. Even played in the minors, 79 to 82. You know, I see these losers every day. Dopers, crooks, gangbangers.
Law doesn't care much for losers like that.
Winston was different. He could have got out. The brother was no loser.
I'm sorry.
You own a gun, Mr. Shine?
No.
Smith & Wesson, 5906.
What, do you think I did this?
No, of course not. But we have to ask everybody. I mean, you know how it is. So where were you last night?
Here, work. I was at work.
Anyone with you corroborate that?
Do you mind?
No, wait.
Yeah.
What did you think? You thought you could fuck with me, you miserable piece of shit, huh?
No.
I've got your girl here, do you understand me? I've got your little whore right here.
Stop, please.
Where are you?
Shut the fuck up, Dex, take care of her.
No problem.
I don't like killing people, but if you're not here in 20 minutes, I'm gonna put a bullet
please,
in her brain.
Don't.
And then one in Deanna. And sweet little Amy, too. I'm gonna kill all your women, Charlie. Do you understand?
It was a mistake, a big mistake. I'm ready to do what you ask now.
Do you have my 100,000?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I will. Just tell me how to get there.
55 East Erie, apartment 4010.
Got it.
20 minutes, Charlie. Next time I visit your wife, it ain't gonna be for a cup of coffee.
Church chats with the secretary while Charles puts on his coat.
Is there a problem?
I'm sorry. I gotta go.
I had a meeting. I'll call you.
In a bank.
10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100,000. Are you sure you want to carry all this out with you, Mr. Shine?
Yeah.
Charles runs towards an apartment building and goes through a set of revolving doors. He pauses outside room 4010. The door is ajar, and a set of keys hang from the lock. Charles pushes the door open and steps into the apartment. LaRoche comes out of a room.
What's up, Charles? Come on.
Charles slowly follows LaRoche down the modern, grey-walled hallway and into a lounge. LaRoche stands by the doorway, while Lucinda sits on a sofa with her arms tightly folded. Dexter stands behind her with a gun pointing at her head.
Come on in. Don't be scared.
LaRoche takes Charles's briefcase and Dexter cocks his gun. LaRoche takes one of the wads of cash from the case.
Wait! Yo, Dex, you think I should count this or just trust him?
Sure. Why not?
He looks like a trustable guy.
LaRoche pulls a gun.
Fucking move, I'll kill you, bitch!
LaRoche crouches and points his gun at Charles's head.
One motherfucking...
Two motherfucking...
Three!
I gave you the money!
What? No, you didn't give me the money. You fucking make me kill for it. Keep something in mind, Charles. I'll always be one step ahead of you. Always. Well, my dear Dexter, I think it's time to relocate.
Yeah, relocate. Au revoir.
Mm-hmm.
Dexter and LaRoche head out.
Congratulations, Charlie. You just bought your life back.
The two men leave and Charles takes his head out of his hands. He gets to his feet and looks across the lounge at Lucinda lying whimpering on the sofa. He glances around, then steps towards her.
Are you okay?
She sits up, holding her head.
I don't even know. They must have just followed me. I don't know why. They just pushed their way.
It's okay now.
She looks up at him, then stands, tensely.
Are you sure that they're gone?
He's gone. I paid him. I paid him everything.
But your daughter.
He looks down. Lucinda's eyes are wet with tears.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I should.
I think it's over now. You're safe. My family's safe.
He turns away and very slowly walks down the hallway. Lucinda stares after him. Charles walks along a railway platform as travellers get onto a train. He stares at the carriage door, but remains on the platform as a guard signals with his hand. Charles takes out his cell phone and holds it to his ear. Charles slowly lowers the phone as the train pulls away from the station and glides into a tunnel. Charles stands, blank and unmoving on the platform. Charles sits in a bar, staring into space. He takes a deep drag of his cigarette, then looks up as Detective Church strolls over to him. Church smiles as he takes off his raincoat.
You a hard man to track down? You're not at work. You're not at home.
So this is where all you bored executive types go to dry your sorrows.
I've been meaning to call you.
I'm sure. You know, ever since he was a kid, Winston never could seem to catch a break. You know who he always reminded me of? Bobby Bonds. Unluckiest player to ever step up to the plate. Bobby Bonds struck out 187 times in 1969, more than any other player in a single season except... one. You know who?
Bobby Bonds.
Bobby Bonds. Following year. 189 strikeouts. Now that's unlucky.
He looks at the barman.
It's my new buddy. Sean owns this place.
Hey, Sean, Scotch, drop the rocks.
Coming up, Frank.
Sean says that you and Winston had a drink here recently. Hey, you mind telling me what you were talking about?
Hockey.
Hockey. That's it?
It was a game on.
Now, I still need to know where you were last night.
I told you. I was working.
No one at your office can confirm that.
I was alone.
Okay, Mr. Shine. Maybe you'd be more comfortable talking to me with your lawyer. Why don't the two of you come by my office tomorrow morning? And just so you know, I'm gonna crucify the son of a bitch who killed Winston.
Church leaves his card in front of Charles and downs his drink. He puts on his Trilby hat and raincoat and walks out of the bar.
See you, Sean.
Detective.
Charles stares into space as he takes another deep drag on his cigarette and flicks off a long finger of ash. At home, Deanna comes downstairs and looks into the kitchen, where Charles sits hunched at the table.
Charles?
Charles looks up at Deanna, who steps into the kitchen, her hands in the pockets of her dressing gown.
Amy's sleeping.
Yeah.
He stares up at her.
I've made a horrible mistake, Dee.
Charles stands and faces Deanna, who stares at him with concern.
The money we put away for Amy. It's gone.
Gone?
All of it.
What are you talking about?
I'm so sorry.
Where is it? Where is the money?
I'll figure it out.
Figure out what? What's going on, Charles?
I'll find a way.
What have you done? Tell me what you've done. Seven years of savings. You fucking explain yourself.
I'll tell you, Dee. I'll tell you everything. And it's not just about the money.
Charles comes out of Union Station. His lawyer, Jerry, strides over to him.
Ah, come on. We're late.
I have to tell Lucinda first, Jerry.
No, I've called this detective twice already this morning. He's a real hard-ass type, you know?
I have to.
You think this guy's fucking around?
I'll meet you down there.
So what am I supposed to tell them?
Help me, Jerry.
Charles!
At Avery Price.
Lucinda Harris, please.
She's not in her office.
Lucinda.
Oh, wait, here she comes now.
A black woman.
No. Lucinda Harris.
Yeah?
No, you saw us here. Together, twice, remember?
I saw you with her temp.
Temp?
Sure, you know, answered her phones occasionally, took long lunches, always late. A temp. Jane something. She quit last week.
Charles furrows his brow and turns away. He stops and looks back at the reception desk.
I'm a financial advisor. I cheat clients.
He walks away. Charles returns to apartment 4010. He pushes the door open to find a real estate agent showing a couple round.
And it comes fully furnished, just like you see. What we call our lived-in look.
She turns to Charles.
May I help you, sir?
Is this place for rent?
Yes. Would you like a brochure?
It was rented. I was here.
Yes, well, it's available again now. Are you interested?
You rented it to a woman.
No. It was a couple, a woman and her boyfriend. They left unexpectedly. Very nice couple. You know them?
He takes a brochure.
They make it all worth it, don't they?
Yes, I do.
On the front of the brochure is a picture of a little girl. It's the same picture Lucinda claimed was her daughter, Amber. Trains glide through the city and pull into Union Station.
This is the end of the Red Line. All passengers, please disembark at this time. Thank you.
Charles stands on one of the platforms and watches the passengers disembark. He looks up and down the platform, then spots Jane, the woman who claimed her name was Lucinda, getting off one of the carriages. She wears a long black overcoat and has her auburn hair tied back. Charles walks along the other side of the platform, keeping his eyes glued to Jane. The passengers file out into the station's main concourse, and a smartly dressed man carrying a briefcase runs up to Jane. Charles watches as Jane and the man walk out of the station and kiss goodbye. The man gets into a cab and Jane walks along the street. Charles watches through a glass door as Jane glances behind her, then walks over to a guy leaning against a smart black saloon. She taps the guy's bum with her case and he turns. It's LaRoche.
What? I'd like to get to the car, please.
Half an hour.
Oh, half an hour?
Sorry.
I promise.
Jane wraps her arms around LaRoche's neck as they kiss. Charles stares out at them. Jane gets into the back of the car and LaRoche calls out.
Hey, Dex.
Yo, Prince.
We out of here.
Dexter throws him the keys and the two men get into the car. Charles walks down an alley and goes back into the hotel where he was attacked. A dark-haired young woman's behind the reception desk.
Want a room? Top floor.
Charles goes into one of the hotel's slightly dingy rooms. He puts the chain on the door and throws his keys onto the bed, then pulls out his cell phone and dials.
Charles.
Jerry.
Good. So I talked with this detective. He's got nothing on you. He's just fishing.
Thanks.
But listen, you've got to tell him everything. It's the only way out of this.
What happens to Amy's money if they find him?
Well, it's going to be state's evidence.
And I never see it again. No, I have to take care of this myself. It's the only way.
What are you talking about?
Jerry, I have to get Amy's money back.
Charles, wait. Charles.
In the restaurant, Charles watches Jane and the businessman she met at the station sitting together at a table. Sam, the businessman, moves away from the table to make a call on his cell phone. While Sam's out of the way, Jane also makes a call. Sam and Jane walk into the Lake Hotel. The night clerk's behind the desk as Dexter lurks nearby, wearing a hotel security uniform.
Hi, I'd like a room, please. $46 a night.
Sam pays and Dexter glances over his shoulder at Jane.
You want to use the hotel safe?
No.
Sam takes the room key and leads Jane out of the reception area. Dexter saunters over to the tense-looking clerk and gives him some money. LaRoche, unshaven and wearing his scruffy olive-green coat, walks in and Dexter follows him to the elevators. Charles, in a lounge area, stands and watches the two men as LaRoche presses the elevator call button. The clerk is busy putting letters into pigeonholes. The elevator reaches the 12th floor and Sam and Jane get out. Sam checks the number on his key.
I think it's this way.
He takes her hand and they walk down the corridor. The elevator descends and down on the ground floor, LaRoche pulls on a black woolly hat. Charles charges up the hotel stairwells. Sam smiles at Jane as he leads her down the corridor. On the ground floor, the elevator doors open and Dexter and LaRoche step inside. Sam shares a laugh with Jane as he unlocks the door to their room. Charles continues pounding up the stairs. In the elevator, LaRoche and Dexter slot ammo clips into their automatic pistols. Charles makes his way up to the 12th floor and scrambles into his room, just as the elevator arrives and Dexter and LaRoche get out. Charles peers through the spy hole as LaRoche passes the door. LaRoche pulls up his hood as he walks towards Sam's room. Dexter scans the corridor, and Charles watches them through the spy hole in his door. Dexter and LaRoche stand at either side of the corridor, and Dexter points at him before walking around the corner. Charles picks up a broken wooden lampstand from the table beside him, then softly opens the door and steps out into the corridor. Around the corner, Dexter kicks open a door and peers inside. Charles pads across to Sam's room where LaRoche is crouched over, opening the lock with the credit card. Charles swings the lampstand. LaRoche crumples to the floor. Charles smashes him in the head again, then hides in the alcove of the door as Dexter peers around the corner. Seeing nothing untoward, Dexter walks back around the corner. Charles takes LaRoche's gun. Sam and Jane are sweet-talking on the bed as Charles barges in, dragging LaRoche with him.
Hey! Hey, what's going on? You can have all my money. My wallet's on the table. Take it.
Charles locks the door.
I don't want your money. They do. They want it all. You're in a scam.
What?
A con.
These two are going to take you for everything you've got.
Jane stares at him.
I don't know what you're talking about. Who are you and what do you want?
Charles turns to Sam.
You met on the train, did you? By accident, just happened somehow.
He pulls the gun.
She was looking sweet and smart. And you couldn't believe how attracted she was to you. She was just too good to be true. She showed me this picture of her daughter.
He throws down the brochure picture.
Everything this bitch told you was a lie.
Not everything was a lie, Charles.
He was just about to rob you and then rape her. Oh, it wouldn't have been rape, would it?
I don't understand. Why would he rape her?
He holds the gun to Jane's head.
Because it makes you feel guilty you didn't stop it. That you didn't protect her. You know, later on, she may even be as sick as to tell you she had an abortion. Anything, so you don't go to the place.
Look, I don't want any part of this.
No, there's a man waiting in the stairwell.
I have to leave.
No!
He points the gun at Sam as LaRoche starts to come round.
Boy, you're getting better, Charles.
He rolls over and pulls off his hood and hat.
I'm kind of proud of you.
I want my money back. I want everything you took from me.
LaRoche sneers and spits out a tooth.
Well, I don't think that's going to be possible, Charlie.
Just give him his money and let's go.
He's a fucking mark, for Christ's sake. That sweetie pie is still worried about that little girl of yours.
Oh, stop it!
She didn't look that sick to me.
Just stop it!
Sam suddenly grabs at Charles's gun. One of the shots hits Jane in the stomach as Sam wrestles the gun from Charles.
Let me out of here!
Dexter runs over.
Now! No, I'm telling you, move away from the fucking door! I gotta get out of here. I'm gonna shoot! Get out of my way! I'm leaving!
LaRoche has another gun and shoots Sam in the chest several times as Charles takes cover behind him. LaRoche gazes at Jane, who lies back on the bed, gasping for breath. LaRoche turns to Charles, cowering in the corner. He stares coldly at Charles and aims his gun at him. Charles dives for the door and slams it onto Dexter's hand, forcing him to drop his gun. Charles grabs the gun and shoots LaRoche in the side of the head.
Kill you, motherfucker!
Dexter barges in, headbutting Charles and grabbing the gun Sam dropped. Charles grabs LaRoche's reloaded gun and empties the chamber into Dexter's chest. Dexter slumps to the floor, and his head lolls forward. The blood-stained figures of Dexter, Sam, and LaRoche lie motionless on the floor. Jane lies trembling on the bed, her eyes wide open in fear. Charles gets to his feet and drops his gun. He walks over to Jane and stares down at her. She looks pleadingly up at Charles, who glances around the room. When he looks back at Jane, her face is blank and still. He walks out. Paramedics and police are at the hotel. In his room, Charles is interviewed.
Step by step, what did you hear?
Sir, there's no ID on the white male. Prince people are on.
Right. See if he's on the register. Check what's in the hotel safe.
Sir.
Sorry about that. You were saying?
I heard the shots. I saw the security guy run past, so I just closed the door.
You did the right thing. You don't know how many wannabe heroes I ship off to the mortgage week. Okay, Mr. Sheen, Shine?
Shine.
Shine. All right, if we need anything more, we'll contact you.
The detective leaves. Charles picks up his coat and walks to the open door. Outside, he sees Church talking to some other officers. Charles ducks out of the way.
Vince, can we get the happy snappers out of here today? I'm losing the will to live.
The bodies are still slumped in the other room.
Frank, what are you doing here, Frank?
Church goes over to the detective.
Heard you found Dick. Smith and Wesson, 5906.
Yeah, ballistics has it.
What a mess.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. Woman in the suit are having a thing. They get mugged. Security tries to help them. Everybody gets shot.
Look, I'm interested in that gun, so please call me when you get the ballistics report.
Sure.
Thanks.
Okay, take care.
Charles listens through the open door.
Vince, can we get everybody out of here?
The reception area is swarming with police as Charles walks in.
I don't got that much time.
Keep it coming.
The night clerk empties the safe and glances nervously at Charles.
Man, you got a lot in that safe.
Charles notices his briefcase lying on the desk. He steps forward and takes out his driver's license.
I believe that's mine.
He shoots a glance at the anxious-looking clerk. An officer looks at Charles's license and checks it against the metal name tag on the case.
Nice briefcase. Okay, what else you got?
The night clerk shoots a poisonous look at Charles, who takes his case and leaves. Charles walks out of the hotel and glances back at the police as he stops by some newspaper dispensers. He lays his case on one of the dispensers and opens it to find his 100 grand still inside. Charles looks at the police again as he closes the briefcase, then walks away carrying the case and his coat. Charles walks to his office where Elliot's with a secretary.
No sign of it here either.
All right, thanks.
Elliot hands some files to the secretary who leaves, avoiding Charles's gaze. A balding middle-aged man's typing at Charles's computer.
What the hell is this?
Elliot looks up at Charles.
All the years I've known you, I never figured you for a thief, Charles. You want to tell me about the $10,000 for the aspirin spot?
It was an emergency. I was going to pay it back.
Pay it back? But I'm not a bank. And now you're stealing from me. If I were to write a bill for what you owe me, what should I make it for?
It was just the once, I swear.
Well, Barry will be the judge of that. So, tell me what was so important that you had to do this.
Can't. I can't tell you. I want to, but I can't. I'm sorry.
Fine. You want to play it that way, I'll start proceedings.
Proceeding?
He suspends you while we conduct an investigation.
Just pay it back. The most you'll get is community service.
Elliot leaves Charles with Barry, the accountant.
Keep stonewalling us, pal. You go to jail.
Charles looks down, and the screen fades to black. A caption. December. It's a dark night as Charles walks across the parking lot of the state penitentiary. Wardens open a barred metal gate, and he steps through.
Hi there.
The gate is closed behind him, and a warden searches his case.
Hey, Teach. Hank, isn't it? That's good. I hate it when people don't remember your name. Go on through.
Charles walks through a metal detector.
It's Charles, by the way. Right. Charles. Did I ask you what you're in for yet?
Embezzlement.
It's not a bad deal. 6 months teaching cons for ripping off your boss.
Charles cleans a blackboard and turns to his class of convicts.
What the fuck is that? Puerto Rico. How do you spell that?
Okay, guys.
They turn to him.
There's a quiz on your desks. It'll probably take you as long as it takes me to read your homework, so let's go.
The cons throw their exercise books onto Charles's desk and go back to their own desks. Charles sits and gathers the books together into one pile. He takes one of the books and flicks through it, glancing up at the disinterested convicts. Charles notices another book within the pile and pulls it out. The word sidetracked is written across the front of the book. Charles opens the book and starts to read the handwritten story.
The morning it all began like any other morning. Charles was running late. And as a result, he missed his regular train.
Charles looks up at the convicts, who are all getting on with the quiz paper. His gaze returns to the book.
Championship fucking. 12-rounder. I need a loan, Charlie. Charles had made him kill. Charles was to blame. He was a murder suspect. It didn't turn out to be this whole other person. Charles wiped his prints and ran away like he was never there. Back to his shitty little life. And when he finished reading the story, he went to the laundry room.
Charles closes the book and gazes at the cover. Charles keeps hold of the book as he stands and slowly walks across the classroom. He walks out into the corridor, where a warden is reading a paper and watching a portable TV.
Yeah?
I need to use the bathroom.
I'll alert the media.
The warden returns to his newspaper and Charles paces down the corridor. He glances back at the warden, then walks through a set of double doors, pausing to look back once more. The warden's engrossed in his newspaper. Charles walks on. Convicts are working in the laundry room as Charles comes in.
Peter. Looking for Daddy.
The blue-shirted convicts stare at Charles as he walks through the room. A Hispanic inmate avoids Charles's gaze and moves out of the way as Charles walks past him. Charles spins round. He turns back again and looks towards a doorway leading round a corner. Charles slowly walks around the corner into a room filled with steam and racks of folded clothing.
I hope you'll like my story.
He can't see LaRoche.
You never checked if I made it out of that hotel alive, did you? You're so predictable, Charles. It takes more than one bullet to kill me. Much more.
Charles walks on and finds LaRoche sitting in an alcove, smoking a cigarette.
But you took something from me, Charlie. And that ain't right.
It's my money.
Fuck the money. You kill her.
You're insane.
LaRoche stares at the wall.
I loved her, Charlie. When you just wanted to fuck her.
What do you want?
I want you, Charlie.
LaRoche walks over to Charles. He has scars around his left eye, and the iris is now nothing but a pale, milky film.
I'm gonna fuck with your life because I can. By the way, is your daughter still a virgin?
Charles lunges at LaRoche, who slams him against a wall.
You don't know how happy I was to see your name on those notebooks. It's like if you begged me to find you. Man, you ended up in the wrong prison, Charlie.
LaRoche.
Yeah.
I chose this prison.
Charles drops the ceramic shank that Winston gave him into his hand and plunges it into LaRoche's stomach. He backs LaRoche up against one of the racks and viciously twists the blade. LaRoche gasps in pain and tries to struggle with Charles, who gives the shank another twist. LaRoche slumps to the floor and twitches before going limp. Charles stares down at his dead tormentor, then picks up the exercise book and slowly walks out. Out in the corridor, a doctor holds a small torch and looks into Charles's eyes.
Okay, Mr. Shine, you're free to go.
Two guards push LaRoche's body past on a gurney. Charles stares at the black body bag as it's wheeled away.
Take it easy now.
The doctor takes his bag and walks away. Charles stares after the doctor and the gurney, then slowly turns and walks away in the other direction. A warden opens the door and Charles steps into an administration room where Church is talking to a couple of other detectives. Church looks over at Charles and steps towards him as the other detectives leave.
What did you tell them?
The truth. I went to use the bathroom and this guy jumped me with a shank.
Well, that guy was the asshole who killed Winston. He killed two people in Paris, one in New York. You expect me to believe that you overpowered him?
I guess I got lucky.
Church nods with a faint smile, and Charles walks past him. A warden opens a barred door, and Charles steps through.
You brought that shank in with you. It's premeditated murder. Law don't care who you kill.
Charles turns and looks at Church.
I guess the law didn't care much for Winston either.
The two men stare at each other. Then Church glances away and nods to a warden, who closes the barred door behind Charles. With a faint smile, Charles turns away from Church and walks through another door. Church watches through the bars as Charles strides out of the penitentiary. Charles comes home and puts his briefcase down on a table in the hallway. He glances around and walks towards the lounge. Deanna comes out of another room and stands up close to Charles. She looks into his face and touches his cheek as Amy runs downstairs.
Hi. See you guys later.
Hey, sweetheart.
She has a school bag slung over her shoulder and grabs a coat from a chair. Amy runs out of the house and down the driveway. She runs onto the street and gets onto a yellow school bus, which is parked nearby. The bus pulls away and drives along the quiet residential street, which is covered with brown autumnal leaves. ITFC audio description was written by Matthew Vickers and Alan Blyton, and read by Matthew Vickers. Cast in order of appearance: LaRoche, Vincent Cassell; Charles Shine, Clive Owen; Amy Shine, Addison Timlin; Deanna Shine, Melissa George; Lucinda Harris, Jennifer Aniston; train conductor, Sandra B; Winston Boyko, RZA; accountant, William Armstrong; Elliot Firth, Tom Conti; Susan Davis, Rachel Blake; Night Clark Ray, Richard Leaf; Dexter, Exhibit; Avery Price, Receptionist; Catherine McCord; Jerry the Lawyer, Dennis O'Hare; Candy, Georgina Chapman; Patrol Officer, David Oyelowo; Detective Church, Giancarlo Esposito; Bank Teller, Claire Lubert; Real Estate Agent, Jennifer Joan Taylor; Sam Griffin, David Morrissey; Homicide Detective, Sam Douglas; Lake Hotel Police Officer, Fortis Dealey; Correctional Officer Hank, Danny McCarthy; Correctional Officer 2, Ryan Romaine; Paramedic, Chiki Okonkwo; Prison Guard 1, James Chrisman; Prison Guard 2, Marcus Holton; Prison Guard 3, Leo McCoy; Prison Guard 4, Roberto Rangel; Man in Prison Laundry, Ronald Tanner; Bernie the Dog, Dozer; UK Stunt Coordinator, Glenn Marks; US Stunt Coordinator, Rick Lefevre; Charles' Stunt Double, James Grogan; Lucinda's Stunt Double, Emma Mack; Stunt Double, Neil Finnegan. Unit Production Manager, Rachel Neal; First Assistant Director, Sean Cameron Guest; Financial Controller, Guy Barker; Production Executive, Gina Gardini; Executives in Charge of Physical Production, Tim Clawson, Jake Myers; Executives in Charge of Post-Production, Linda Borgeson, Jennifer Lane; Executive in Charge of Business Affairs, Barry Littman; Executive in Charge of Music, Randy Spendlove; Executive in Charge of Casting and Creative Affairs, Kelly Carmichael. Get Your Bars Up, written by Alvin Joyner, David Drew, Jason Smith, Charles Mitchell and Marvin Jones, performed by Strong Arm Steady, featuring Exhibit and Jelly Roll, courtesy of Straight From the Shoulders Music. Be the Girl, written by Heather Mitchell, performed by Aslin, courtesy of Capitol Records, under license from EMI, Film and Television Music. Wish I Had a Life, written by Bruce Coplow, performed by JD and the Straight Shot, courtesy of JD and the Straight Shot, LLC. Trouble, written by Alicia Moore and Tim Armstrong, performed by Pink, courtesy of Arista Records, Inc. Licensed, courtesy of Sony BMG, Commercial Markets, UK. The Switch, written by Dan Black, Alexi Neri, Marco Baroni, Domenico Canu, and Sergio Della Monica, performed by Planet Funk, courtesy of Bustin' Loose Limited, Sony BMG Music Entertainment, UK and Ireland Limited, by arrangement with Sony BMG Music Entertainment and EMI Music Italy, S.P.A. Luna Du Paris, written and produced by Alexandra Desplat. Gonna Kill That Dog, written by Bruce Coplow, performed by J.D. and the Straight Shot, courtesy of J.D. and the Straight Shot, LLC. Really Want None, written by Freedom Drayton, performed by Free Murder, courtesy of 36 Chambers Records. Something Wrong, written by Bruce Coplow, performed by J.D. and the Straight Shot, courtesy of J.D. and the Straight Shot, LLC. Back Again, written by Bruce Coplow, performed by J.D. and the Straight Shot, courtesy of J.D. and the Straight Shot, LLC. Johnny, written by James Fleming Rasmussen and Rula Ra, produced by DJ Khalil for DJ Khalil Productions, performed by Rula Ra. Rula Ra appears courtesy of Brother to Brother Ent, Inc. Contains a sample of Johnny Got His Gun, performed by Fleming Rasmussen, courtesy of Reprise Records, by arrangement with Warner Music Group, film and TV licensing. Color processing by Technicolor, a Thompson service. Cameras supplied by Joe Dunton Cameras. Produced and distributed on Kodak Motion Picture Film. Certificate number 41872. Motion Picture Association of America. Lee Lighting Limited. Color by Deluxe. Dolby Digital in selected theaters. Sony Dynamic Digital Sound in selected theaters. Digital DTS Sound in selected theaters. Directors Guild of America. This picture was made under the jurisdiction of the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, affiliated with AFL-CIO-CLC. The production wishes to gratefully acknowledge the support of the Chicago Film Office and the Illinois Film Office, the City of Chicago, the Mayor's Office, Chicago, Emma Halfstrom, John Hadity, Allswang, Lisbeth Seville, and Tenon, John Graydon. Victoria Fraser of Mediacom International, FedEx Corps, and Molly Smith, Hewlett-Packard. Jennifer Aniston's jewelry supplied exclusively by Tiffany & Co. CRC, Mulberry, Esme Young, Joseph, DKNY, Armani, Gap, Jimmy Choo. Copyright 2005, Paddle XV Productions Limited, all rights reserved. The events and characters depicted in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead, or to actual events, is purely